Welcome to the Premier Foods Q3 interim management statement. For the duration of the call, you'll be on listen only, and at the end of the call, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad and you'll be connected to an operator. I'm now handing you to Michael Clarke, CEO, to begin. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining this call. I'm Mike Clarke, the Chief Executive Officer of Premier Foods, and I'm sitting here with Jim Smart, our Chief Financial Officer. As you know, I've been with Premier Foods for just over a month now. During that time, I've covered a lot of ground to understand the business, to understand its current trading performance, but more importantly, to also identify short and medium-term priorities to help restore profitable growth. Firstly, I want to share with you some of my initial thoughts about the business. I will then ask Jim to provide more detail on the third quarter performance and also the full year outlook, and then together we'll be happy to take any questions. I do want to be clear at the outset that beyond my initial thoughts about priorities, I will not get into fine detail about our future plans at this stage. There is still a lot to do to deliver the fourth quarter and also finalize our 2012 plan. We do intend to provide a full presentation of our strategies and plans at our full year results early in 2012. Let me start by sharing some of my first impressions of Premier Foods. Clearly, it's a business with significant challenges. I am, however, equally convinced that there are substantial opportunities. Nobody can dispute that UK consumers like our brands. More than 99% of UK households bought one or more of our brands during the last year. And the way I look at that, that's pretty impressive. I'm hugely impressed by the talented people who work here. They have a great passion for the brands and are as determined as I am to turn this business around. With the right focus and dedication, I'm convinced there is a brighter future ahead. Together with my management team, I've been working on identifying a small number of key priorities that will guide us going forward, and we will make a change from the past. Our immediate priority is to agree a refinancing package with our banks that is adequate to support our plans. In parallel to this, we are strengthening the fundamentals of our business as follows. Firstly, we plan to focus our investments and resources behind 8 power brands. In alphabetical order, these are Ambrosia, Batchelors, Bisto, Hovis, Lloyd Grossman, Mr. Kipling, OXO, and Sharwood's. These brands represent more than 2/3 of our branded sales, and we believe have the most potential in terms of innovation, category extension, and growth. Secondly, we will strengthen our marketing and sales execution behind the 8 power brands and across the company in general. We will work more collaboratively with our customers to deliver profitable category growth and move away from spending too much time trading the brands at the expense of their medium-term health. What you will see in future is a focus on innovation, improved in-store presence, better promotional planning, and other brand-building initiatives. Thirdly, to help us focus, we plan to dispose of selected businesses where we currently add little or no value and which have little strategic fit. This will also help us to deleverage, but the priority is focus. Fourthly, as a consequence of right-sizing the business, we'll be able to reduce our costs further to improve profitability and generate the necessary funds to invest behind the power brands. We believe we can significantly exceed the 20 million cost savings target that was set at the half year. As I said earlier, we plan to make a full presentation of our strategies and plans at the full year results presentation in early 2012. Before I hand over to Jim, though, I just wanted to reiterate that my overall first impressions are optimistic. We have brands that people like, and we have talented, passionate people who are determined to turn the business around. While the current trading performance continues to be a disappointing and is significantly below our expectations, we have already identified a number of steps that will help us build a more profitable business in the future. I'd like to thank you and hand over to Jim now to talk about the third quarter.
Good morning. Let me add a few points about our trading. Firstly, the results are significantly below the level we expected at the half year. As we had anticipated, the steep decline which we saw in markets in the first half has not continued into the third quarter. However, our trading has lagged the market and our sales are down 3.6%. In grocery, sales are down 5%. It is clear that the business is still suffering from the lost momentum following the first half pricing discussions and consequent customer dispute. We have increased promotional spend as planned, but the uplifts have not reached the anticipated levels. Volumes are thus down. Mix has also been adverse, meaning that we will not match last year's trading profit in the second half. In Hovis, sales were up 1%. Within this, milling sales are up 27% and bread sales are down 8%. In bread, we have lost volume owing to stiff competition. In addition, pricing in the market is putting margins under increasing pressure. This is likely to mean that the rate of profit decline year on year will accelerate in the second half. In Brooks of Anna, sales are down 13%. As expected, volumes are down owing to contract losses. New contracts have been won, but are at lower margins. This represents a continuation of the level of trading loss seen in the first half. As a consequence of Q3 performance, we do not expect to reach market expectations for trading profit this year. The outturn depends on Christmas trading, and at this stage, there is little visibility about how precisely this will develop. Also, as a result of the poor trading, we feel that we need to improve our banking covenant headroom. We're therefore discussing with our banks resetting our banking covenants to maintain appropriate headroom and to put in place facilities beyond the current maturity, which is December 2013. These discussions are constructive, and the company is confident that an appropriate agreement can be concluded.
Thank you, Jim. Operator, could we open the line to any questions, please?
Yes, of course. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question on this call, please press 7 on your telephone keypad now. And we have a question coming from the line of Martin Debu from Investec. Please go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Martin.
There's obviously a number of questions, but the one that occurs to me most obviously is, Mike, the power brand strategy would seem to be a sensible one. But the short-term problem you have is it looks to me as if your power brands are something like 45% of group sales. You've maybe got 20% of group sales in businesses which are effectively non-core, which is Brooks of Anna and Milling. But that leaves sort of 35% of group sales, which is the secondary brands within grocery mainly, which is I would characterise as an exposed flank under your new strategy. And given, you know, the centrality of maintaining short-term profit momentum, how are you going to balance, Mike, I guess is the question, the power brand strategy with defending your flank, I suppose?
Martin, great question, and your stats are correct. I think the way I'm looking at it is in two phases. In the short term, we need to focus on short-term tactics that can support our complete portfolio that we have today. However, in the medium to long term, which I think is the more important thing that I'd like to have everyone focus on, is we need to find a way to start pulling this business forward and getting it to accelerate its growth. And the best way to do that is to focus our resources on fewer brands, to invest behind those brands, build credibility not only amongst our employees, but also with retailers and consumers, that this is a company that is actually starting to get on the right trajectory with those 8 power brands, which represents 2/3 of our branded revenue. Simultaneously, it's important that we, in order to focus on those 8 power brands, we do selected divestitures of businesses that will probably be better off in other people's hands as opposed to us. Those are businesses that others will invest in. The people that go with those businesses and those brands will be in a better position, I think, to flourish under somebody else's management as opposed to under our management, because currently we're stretching ourselves too thin to try and keep everything afloat, if you will. And so hence I look at it as what I have to do in the short term with my team to keep momentum in the results across the broad portfolio. But then the longer term, which is more medium to longer term, which is more important, is to focus.
Mike, is just a quick supplementary to that. I mean, you know, clearly disposals are on the agenda, and you know, you've confirmed what the power brands are. But I guess you're talking about right sizing the cost base. Is that just what I would call sort of incremental right sizing, which is stripping cost out of the business as it stands, or are you actually looking to shrink the business in areas where a disposal isn't an option?
Looking at doing both, we're looking at right-sizing the organization through the divestitures so that we do have a smaller business that we can focus on and we can invest behind. But at the same time, I believe we can do significantly better in taking costs out of the business well beyond what was articulated at the mid-year review, where we said 20 million would be the savings that we'd achieve. I believe we can go significantly above that, and obviously, Martin, I'll be able to share more details on those numbers at the year end. I already have a very good view of what those numbers are. My team and the board have a very good view of what those numbers are, but for obvious reasons, I'm in my second month. I'm not going to quote that number just yet, but it is significantly above the 20 million.
Okay, thank you for that, and good luck.
And cheers.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from the line of Ian Simpson, RBS. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. good morning, guys. And it sounds like the sort of new strategy is making all the right noises. But I was just wondering, in the sort of shorter term, could you talk a little bit about what are the sort of key variables on how you think about the capital structure? Because I mean, there are three players here. There's you, there's the lending banks, and there's the big shareholders. And I realise obviously you're not going to be able to sort of give us details as to how those discussions are ongoing, but what are the swing factors? How much weight are each of those three players putting on Christmas trading, for instance? You know, how are you conceptually approaching those talks? If you could give some colour, that'd be great. Thanks very much.
Well, I think I'll take a first crack at answering, and then Jim, if you can jump in too. I'll start with the banks. One of the key priorities, as I mentioned earlier, is to ensure that we get the right financing agreements in place that are suitable and support our strategy that we've articulated and what we're trying to do over the coming years. We've had very open conversations with the banking syndicate, Jim and myself. We've been very transparent about what we're trying to do and how we're going to do this with the turnaround. And I think the banks have embraced that. And obviously we need to continue those conversations with the banks and come to an appropriate agreement, which I believe we will do in the very near future. From a shareholder point of view and from a board point of view, we've also been clear with what we're trying to achieve. And obviously on this call, we're able to now get to more shareholders and be even clearer with what we're trying to do with regard to the strategic focus on how we go forward. Clearly in the short term, we are needing to make sure, as I mentioned to Martin earlier, we are needing to make sure that this business continues to regain momentum. We clearly lost momentum after the first half pricing discussions with retailers and the delistings. That's taken us a while to get back on track. We are still trying to get back to the quality of availability and distribution that we had at the beginning of the year, and I think we're only starting to get there now. If we look at fourth quarter, there is a difference in the portfolio that we sell in the fourth quarter with our Christmas range. And then I think the nice thing about that Christmas range is they are unique, better, and special, and they are products that consumers and customers want and need in the fourth quarter. So I think I'm hoping that we're going to get to a fourth quarter which is going to be seen as a bit of a improvement on where we've been with lost momentum. And then get everyone focused on a right-sized business as we get into the new year and drive accelerated growth in the right-sized business. Jim, would you want to add anything to that?
Ian, I think the way we're looking at it, we're having constructive discussions with banks and with pension funds because the capital structure needs to take account of our pension funds as well. So those discussions are from our point of view, going well. and as we said, we're optimistic of concluding an appropriate deal. If the sense behind the question, Ian, was is this impacting on our ability to invest in the business and do the right thing for quarter four, the answer is no. We may not have enough cash flow, as much cash flow left over as we thought we had to pay down debt as we looked at it at half year, but we're still at a level where we're paying our bills and investing in the business. So we're not pulling back on Christmas plans as a result of the capital structure, if that was behind the question.
Okay, that sounds great. And just a very quick follow-up, if I might. I mean, you clearly have quite a complex organisational structure with your number of factories and that sort of thing. If you do manage to sort of get your disposals out the door and get down to the sort of power brands, should we be thinking that's a bad thing from your sort of structural margin potential because you lose economies of scale, or should we be thinking of that a good thing because you lose unnecessary operational complexity? Thanks very much.
I would hope you would look at it as a good thing, Ian, because as we right-size the organization and do the selected divestitures, we are also looking to find a way to simplify the way we run this business. For the size of this business, I don't believe we need to have the complexity that we have today. I don't think it's necessarily helping us. I don't think it helps us across the board on revenue synergies and cost synergies. And I think by simplifying our business as we go forward, I think that will give us the opportunity to free up resources and actually drive the business harder. And I think in the medium to longer term, I would hope that this right-sized organization will be able to drive improved synergies as opposed to just scale for the sake of scale across a broad portfolio of different businesses.
Sounds great. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Ian.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from the line of Polly Barclay from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Morning. Can we just talk a little bit more about how easy it's going to be for you to make these disposals? I mean, I appreciate that Brooks Avana is probably fairly straightforward, although it's loss-making, but how easy is it to make disposals? And can you talk a little bit more about the potential dis-synergies?
Polly, I'll start. I don't think anything is easy at the moment. There's quite a lot going on that we need to sort through. But I think so long as we are very decisive and very clear about what we will do and what we will not do, I think that will help the organization in how we move forward. Secondly, I don't think on this call we're going to get into specific discussions on specific potential divestitures. I think we have an orderly approach on the selected propositions or businesses that we're looking to divest. We have started some of those discussions, and we will be starting some further discussions regarding the next range of potential divestitures. I think that's the only way that I can answer that question.
We currently have no further questions coming through, so just a reminder, please press 7 if you would like to ask a question on this call. Next question is coming from the line of Charles Peake from Numis. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Charles.
Two questions, please. Is it possible, please, to give some pointer to the scale of the customer dispute impacting Q3, in particular reference that volume decline of 8%, and the volume decline of 13.5% for Hovis? And secondly, is there any sort of pointer that you can provide, please, in respect of what you now expect net debt to be at the year end?
Charles, I'll tackle the first one, then Jim can tackle the second question. I'm not going to get into a specific discussion about one retailer. I think suffice it to say that there's a number of things that have actually affected our business year to date, but also in the third quarter. The first thing is, obviously, we've lost momentum as a result of the pricing discussions with the broad range of retailers in the first half of the year, as well as some fallouts with one or two retailers. We have been slowly but surely, in a constructive way, we've been rebuilding those listings with customers. And the other issue is obviously ensuring that as you get listed or relisted, and as you get your portfolio back into a particular customer or across our customers, that we get the quality of distribution and availability, i.e. the breadth and depth of availability across retailers, and that has been below what we had at the beginning of the year. A third point that I'd make is that when you look at our trade promotion spend, we have increased our trade promotion spend in third quarter and in fourth quarter. However, in these tough times, competitors are doing the exact same thing. Private label are doing the same thing, especially with regard to pricing. You'll have seen some of the actions recently by some of the major multiples on their pricing activities on their own label brands. And consumers are, looking at private label as part of their repertoire of what they purchase. So you'll see that private label has actually grown quite significantly in the third quarter, and A brands have generally been more or less flat in the third quarter. That dynamic has also come into play. So, that's the reason why I feel it's important that as we go forward, we get very focused on where we will direct our resources and drive a positive trajectory in the business on the eight power brands, and that we right-size our business so that we can focus and not get distracted. I also want, as we go forward with the divestitures, I also want to not only focus our organization, but focus people who work with our organization on the power brands and the portfolio of challenger brands that we have below those eight power brands that to some degree will slipstream behind the eight power brands and not have the distraction of those businesses that are being divested impact on the dialogue that we have on the eight power brands internally as well as with our customers. Jim, do you want to cover the debt?
Charles, net debt, the way to think about it is if you took out the two disposals we had this year and looked at last year's year-end net debt on a pro forma basis, it was 891. I think expectations in the market were for that to come down to about 850. And what we're saying today is we think we'll be a bit above that. The moving part within that is trading profit. As the trading profit comes down, clearly the cash generation comes down, and it depends on that where you bring your profit number down to as to where you would expect the number to be. But we're not expecting as much as that 40 million of recurring cash flow going to pay down debt.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from the line of Jeff Stent from Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jeff.
I'm just a little bit perplexed because if I sort of reflect back on the history of Premier, you've generated a lot of savings and synergies from putting businesses together. Yet it sort of feels from this call this morning that by effectively starting to reverse some of that process, we don't get any dis-synergy. And I just intellectually struggle to sort of stack that up. So anything you could sort of say to help me there would be appreciated.
Jeff, you're right. The business model is that we get synergies to put these businesses together. And I think we have generated synergies in the past. I think we do have dis-synergies as we dispose of businesses. I mean, if you think back to canning, what we said that in selling canning, there are dis-synergies because that was half of our volume. And that was behind the 20 million cost saving we needed to take out. That would take out the dis-synergies and a bit more as we moved our logistics platform to a smaller footprint in a different part of the country, and also as we took out some of the head office costs. So I think you can expect there will be dis-synergies from future sales, but of course the amount of dis-synergy depends on how integrated. There weren't much dis-synergy from corn because it was run as a separate business. There was considerable dis-synergy with canning. So the answer is it's some and some.
So does that sort of imply that the incremental savings you're highlighting, that effectively a sizable chunk of that will be used to cover dis-synergy?
Jeff, I think you're getting a little bit ahead of us now. I think that's a conversation we should have once we identify what it is we're disposing and exactly how it gets carved out.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is coming from the line of Sam Andrew from Blue Mountain Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have two questions. The first regarding market share. I see that your market share has declined 1.9% in Q3. I was hoping you could give a bit more color as to the declines across the different business segments, and I'm particularly interested in the branded versus non-branded market share declines. And then second question regarding price and volume evolution. If I look, your non-branded volumes declined 6%, if I'm reading this correctly. This is in the ongoing business, and I'm just kind of curious to see the kind of pricing evolution, because it implies that you put through a pretty substantial price increase in Q3, and I'm just curious as to you've seen like a shift in how retailers are viewing private label and if they're more willing to accept a pricing increase, and how that dynamic has kind of changed over the last few quarters and perhaps a view going forward if possible. Thank you.
Thanks, Sam. Market shares. The own label market's actually quite difficult to measure. So the market share data we tend to quote is branded. So in grocery, we've lost about 2.1 percentage points in value, and in bread, it's about 1.1 percentage points in value year on year. I think as to the movement in volume versus value on own label, this is a continuation of the trend that we saw in the first half. Pricing of own label products was moved up in the industry as a whole, and ours as well, in the back end of 2010. So there was quite a bit of inflation in the system on the non-branded business already in the first half. So I think that's a continuation of the trend that we've seen.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is coming from the line of Clive Black from Shore Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey, Clive.
There seems to be a chasm between where Premier Foods' expectations were in May and to where the company is actually now, only 5 months later. I know you're not very long in the job, Mike, but can you give us a feel for where things have gone so badly wrong and why we should be confident that there isn't jam tomorrow, so to speak, in the expectations for the fourth quarter and the first quarter? Does your program for this company in the near term, for example, involve people change? And secondly, respecting what you say about waiting for your strategy update in the new year, would your expectations at this stage involve further equity injection as part of taking the business forward on a more stable basis?
Okay. Clive, three questions. Let me go through the first one with regard to the trading since the update in May. I think I've covered that, but let me just go through. I think what effectively happened was when management shared their belief of how we would progress from the mid-year forward, I think there was a belief that there would be a very quick recovery of lost distribution and availability. I think what was not factored in was the impact on momentum in our business. We clearly have had a knock in our momentum across the breadth of our portfolio, especially in grocery, as a result of some of the dislocation with retailers following the pricing discussions. And it's taken a while to get that back on track and get that across retail, not just one or two retailers, but across our retailers, to get the quality of availability and distribution back to where we were at the beginning of the year. And so I think the assumption was probably quite positive that we would do that very quickly, and that has not happened. The second is, I do think that people felt that our promotions would continue to work at the levels that we have been able to achieve lift in volume when we promote our brands, and that has not happened. And I think it's probably, and here I don't have all the facts, but I'm giving you my gut feel, and I'm pretty sure my gut's going to be correct. I think there's two things that have impacted our trade promotion spends. When competing with A brands, other A-branded players have probably beaten us in some regards when we've got similar promotions out there, because they've probably invested more behind building up the equity in their brands, i.e. marketing, and, mm-hmm. and we have not, which is why I think we need to focus our investments on rebuilding the equity in our brands. And then versus private label, when we have similar promotion spends or promotion mechanics in the marketplace to private label, and that could be a buy one, get one free or three for the price of, private label common sense would tell everyone that they're going to hit a lower price point. And if we've got a consumer who's looking for value and is finding that their disposable incomes are under pressure, then very often private label will win on that promotion mechanic versus ourselves. And so I think those things have impacted the business. The third point is we've gone through probably quite a lot of changes in this organization in recent months, people changes. You've got a new guy coming in as the CEO. I have brought in a new sales head last month, and that is to rebuild credibility with our retailers, to partner with our retail partners, to grow our portfolio of brands in their businesses, as well as obviously grow their private label brands, and we manufacture some of their brands too. Mm-hmm. We've recently brought in a new corporate affairs head at the beginning of this month, and I will always look at ways to strengthen capabilities across our organization as we move forward. I think there's always opportunity to build on the strengths that we've got. And also complement the capabilities where there's gaps, and so we'll continue to look at that. Your final question was about equity. No, at this point in time, we are very focused on moving forward with our banking syndicate on the financing arrangements that we've been in discussions with them for the last month. In fact, longer, because that started before I joined. But I've been very involved with Jim in those discussions with the banks. So the first priority is to land that and get an appropriate agreement in place. And as Jim has shared before, as we move forward, seeking longer term financing is also important as another way of financing this business going forward. Not equity.
Okay, that's very clear. Well, I wish you well, and thank you for that.
Thank you, Clive. Cheers, mate.
Thank you. The next question is coming from the line of Martin Deboo from Investec. Please go ahead, Martin.
Gentlemen, thank you. It's a follow-up on something else. I guess it's mainly a question for Jim. Jim, pension, you're not getting any favours here either, because presumably the asset returns are under pressure and the low risk-free rate is going to expand the liability. So I guess questions on my mind. Can you just remind us what you've said on pension deficit and any feeling you can give us for where it might be going? Secondly, how would you characterise the stance of the pension trustees and all this? How supportive are they? Are they happy with the existing cash catch-up of sort of circa 60 million? And is it the case that they will be pressing for an element of any disposal proceeds?
Okay. Pension, yes. I mean, we have obviously the same effects as everyone else as yields come down. What we've said in the past is that the deficit on an actuarial basis, gross of tax, is 535. That was signed off earlier this year. We've also said that that uses a discount rate of gilt plus one. So obviously as gilt yields come down, that pushes up the liabilities, but I guess you need to take your view of whether that's a temporary effect or a permanent effect. The next valuation is not until March 2013, so that's the relevant time to be looking at things. Discussion with the trustees are, as always, very constructive. We keep them informed of our plans, and they are fully aware of the discussions we're having with our banks. And I don't envisage any change to the agreement we've got, whereby we pay in deficit terms £47 million a year over the next 3 years to the next valuation. And then beyond that, the amount to be paid is subject to affordability.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you. We currently have no further questions coming through, so just a final reminder, please press 7 if you would like to ask a question on this call. We have no further questions coming through.
Thank you, operator. Thank you to everybody for joining the call, and thank you for your questions and your interest in Premier Foods. I would like to quickly summarise by repeating that there's a lot that we need to do to get this business back on track in the short term. We do need to bring our financing or our refinancing discussions to a successful conclusion, and then also simultaneously continue the process of reshaping our strategies, our business and our portfolio so we can get this business back onto an even more profitable growth trajectory. I do feel confident that we have strong leadership. I think we can continue to strengthen our leadership in this organization, and with dedication and support from people that are working with us, I think we can turn the corner. And I do look forward to telling you more about our journey when we meet in February for the full year results presentation. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining. You may now disconnect your lines.